You're listening to The World Is Just a Book Away podcast. I'm James Owens, founder and CEO of The World Is Just a Book Away, a nonprofit organization on a mission to promote literacy and education by developing libraries and programs in disadvantaged communities around the world. For more information about The World Is Just a Book Away, please visit www.wijaba.org. That's WIJABA.org. My guest today on The World Is Just a Book Away podcast is Lily Tuck, who is the author of seven novels, among them The News from Paraguay, winner of the 2004 National Book Award, and most recently, Sisters. Lily has also published two collections of stories and a biography, Woman of Rome, A Life of Elsa Morante. This year, she received a Guggenheim Fellowship. I am also honored that Lily is a contributor to my book, The World Is Just a Book Away. In our conversation, Lily and I talk about the impact reading has had on her life and childhood, how she knew from a very young age that she wanted to be a writer, and why she believes literacy is so important. I'd like to thank Lily Tuck for joining us. Lily is an internationally renowned author of 10 books, 8 fiction, 2 nonfiction. She won the National Book Award in 2004 for her book, News from Paraguay, and is also a Guggenheim Fellow. Thank you for joining us today, Lily.
My pleasure.
And I'd like to add on a personal note that Lily and I have known each other for years because her son Josiah is one of my best friends and the godfather of my son Alexander. And
you were a groomsman at his wedding as well.
And I was a groomsman at Josiah's wedding, and I'm your granddaughter's godfather. So we have a lot of interwoven connections.
Good, good.
Lily, to start with, tell us the importance that reading and books have played in your life.
Huge. They've played a huge part in my life. I think you wanted me to read the beginning of my essay, which sort of explains things. So
yeah, we can do that.
Preparing to do that, if that's okay. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Okay. All right. So the essay begins with my saying, I was an only child, and on account of both the war, World War II, and my parents' divorce, I moved around a great deal, first from Paris, where I was born, to Lima, Peru, then to Montevideo, then back to Paris, and finally immigrating to New York in 1947 on a converted troop ship. My first language was French, then Spanish, then English. With each move, I was sent to a different school where I had to learn a new language, a new alphabet. The Spanish alphabet has 29 letters. The French alphabet, like the English one, has only 26 letters, but it has important accents and a cedilla. I also distinctly remember how when I finally arrived in America and was put in fourth grade, then there were no special education or remedial tutorials. The class was studying the Egyptians. There were drawings of pyramids and hieroglyphs pasted on the classroom walls. And afraid that I would be ridiculed, I never once opened my mouth the whole year. As a result, my life as a child was fairly solitary, hard to make friends if you cannot communicate, but it was not unhappy. I had books.
That's beautiful. That's Lily Tuck's first paragraph of her essay for my book, The World Is Just a Book Away. And Lily, I think that very clearly states how important books are to you. I encourage our listeners, when they read the book, to read your essay and learn more about how that transitioned into your being a writer. In this childhood that you describe, what would it have been like for you without books?
I can't imagine. I really can't. I also had a huge I had a big imagination, and I made up characters. And I actually began writing a novel when I was 9. So I think I, you know, because of being so alone or solitary, I had to use my imagination. And I always knew that I wanted to be a writer.
From when you were a small child, you knew?
Yes, yes.
And when did you publish your first book?
Well, that's a little bit embarrassing. I think life intervened. I was married very young. I had 3 children, then divorced. So although I was writing, I wrote a novel that was never published. I worked on it for 7 years. I mean, it was a learning experience, perhaps, but also a slight waste of time looking back. Although, also in retrospect, I'm glad it was never published. But anyway, my first published book, I was 51 years old, so a late bloomer, to say the least.
Interesting, because you said slightly embarrassing, and I didn't realize you were, although I know we've talked about this, I didn't retain in my mind that you were 51. I would say, as someone who's slightly past that age, that for me, it's actually very inspirational that you've written this amazing, not only the number of works you've done, but the quality and the beauty of your writing in this period of time.
Well, thank you.
And I have my Lily Tuck stack of books on my bookshelf. As you know, each time we see each other, I have you sign another one. So now I'm up to 5. I have 5 more to go.
Okay. You're missing 5.
I'm still missing 5. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Lily, why in your opinion is literacy important?
You know, I thought about that because I saw it was one of your questions. I think the ability to read is very much like the ability to think. If one only learns things by rote or by being told about them, one can't form an opinion, or it's difficult anyway to form an opinion and to have a sort of creative idea. I like what Kofi Annan is said to have said: literacy is a bridge from misery to hope.
That's really powerful.
Yeah, it is powerful. But I also go back to thinking that reading is a little bit like thinking.
Hmm. How do you feel, Lily, when you meet people who've read your book and tell you about how certain passages have touched them or moved them?
Don't know. I mean, it's hard to accept praise. I think writers are always very suspicious of praise. They feel that it's not honest or it's not heartfelt. So you always remember, like the Julius Caesar, I mean, the good is interred with their bones. You remember all the sort of bad things that people have said about your work. So although I'm pleased if people, obviously pleased if people praise my work, but I don't quite ever believe them.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that just probably something to do with my own personality, that I'm trying to think of the right words, that I... help me here, that I'm not self-confident enough. I mean, I grew up at a time where women, here we go, were not treated equally. I grew up where I didn't really have a voice. where I wasn't expected to work or have a career or be successful. So the fact that I am fairly successful and do have a career is kind of not a surprise to me because I've worked hard, but it's not something that I felt my parents or the people around me expected from me.
Mm. Do you find that, and this is out of curiosity, and I think our listeners might also be interested, do you find that that's something, you sort of alluded to this, that's consistent with other writers or more unique to you?
I think it's, not the fact that the praise or whatever is not worthy, but I think writers doubt themselves forever. I mean, I think they always feel like they're not getting it quite right. And they're always striving to do better. I'm sure that's true of all the creative arts, really.
What is the feeling you have when you, because I'm thinking back to when I turned in The World Is Just a Book Away, and I knew that I could not make any more edits. It was done. It was on the press. What is the feeling you have when that moment arrives?
Well, I do feel when something is done and that and then I no longer want to work on it. I do definitely have that feeling. And I also, the other thing that happens when I finish a work is that I kind of forget it completely. I can't tell you what my books are about anymore. I mean, I can vaguely, but I can't remember specifics. I can't remember the characters' names. It's like a wall comes down because I've concentrated so hard on working on something that when I've finished, I've really finished. And again, this wall comes down and I can't remember anything about the work anymore.
Do you ever go back and read your books?
Hardly ever. For some sort of research or if I have to talk about something, but I'd rather not, because if I go back to particularly early works, I want to fix everything. I want to edit everything. I think, why did I write that sentence? It's so awful. It's so awkward. It's so banal. No.
I don't know if you found this also, but I find that actors I've had the opportunity to talk to, many of them have also told me that they never watched their movies.
Right. Yes, I'm sure that's true. I mean, you just want to just be able to fix it or make it better all the time. Yeah.
Where do your ideas come from? Where would you say the genesis is of these ideas for your works?
It varies. I mean, some of them are very anecdotal or something I've heard or something I've seen. The example I always use is in the book, The Woman Who Walked on Water. The idea came from seeing, I was in the Caribbean with my husband. We were having lunch in a restaurant on a cliff overlooking a beach. And we saw this woman swim way out to sea, and she had three big dogs with her. And at one point, it was hard to tell whose heads it was, whether it was the dog or the woman. And we sort of said something to the waiter about it. And he said, oh, yes, she comes every year and she swims with her three big dogs. And there was something so sort of not perverse or erotic, but there was something kind of very strange about it. And that was sort of the impetus or what gave me the idea for the novel. Why was this woman swimming so far out? What was her story, etc. Yeah, but very often it's some sort of little event that I've overheard or seen. my first novel, which is, I mean, that event was really strange and bizarre. A friend of mine died standing up, which is incredibly unusual. So I use that as the starting point for a novel, a woman who dies standing up. But that's, I think, extreme. My last book, Sisters, a novel, I was reading another book, a book called Winter by an English writer called Christopher Nicholson, and it's a fictionalized account of Thomas Hardy's last years. And Thomas Hardy was very reclusive, and he lived in Dorset, and he, with his second wife, a woman called Josephine Florence, or Josephine, I can't remember, but no, I think it was Florence. And his first wife, Emma, had died, and they had, it was very well known that they never got along, but after she died, Thomas Hardy spent his whole time locked up in his studio writing love poems to Emma, which really pissed Florence off. And at one point, Florence muses in this novel that first and second wives are like sisters. And that, when I read that, that rang a huge bell. And I thought, I've got to write about that. And also, I've been a first and second wife, so it was sort of familiar territory, although the book is not at all autobiographical. And that's one of my big sort of things that irritate me, is that people assume that my novels are autobiographical when they're not really. I mean, there are details that I take from my life or from other people's lives, but I really feel that they're basically not autobiographical, and that I have an imagination and I can create things.
And what are you what are you working on now, or what's been your latest, most recent?
I have a book that I've pretty much finished, and which I got the Guggenheim Fellowship for. And it's nonfiction. I had a very, very good friend, a woman, an older woman who was an art dealer. She was German, but she lived in Switzerland. And she actually had gone to school in Berlin with my mother and my aunt. And I got to know her when my husband and I spent time in Switzerland. And she was a very well-known art dealer. And she sent me, when we became friends, every time I would go and visit her in Zurich and spend the night, and we would talk. And during our friendship, she's now dead, she sent me lots of postcards. So the book is called Postcards from Marianne. That was her name, Marianne Feilschenfeld. And she and I describe the postcards. That I'm not an art historian, but you know, postcards by Cézanne and Modrian and Gauck and all sorts of other painters. But I try and be a little bit more anecdotal in my description of the postcards. For instance, Modrian loved to dance. Cézanne's best friend was Émile Zola, and besides describing these postcards, I talk about my friendship with this woman, Marianne, and she also had written a memoir, and her family was Jewish. She had to leave Germany, of course, during the war, and they settled in Switzerland. And then I also digress. I love to digress, so that's what the book is.
And when will that be? What is the postcards? What is the title of?
Postcards from Marianne.
And when will that be coming out?
I'm not sure. I'm just getting the contract. So hopefully next year. It's a very short book, but we'll see. Yeah.
Great. Well, yeah. I'll look forward to that. I'll have to catch up to more in next time we see each other.
Yeah.
Can you tell our listeners, this was really the crux of my book, The World Is Just a Book Away. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about a book that somehow touched you or moved you, and why?
Let's see. You know, I was reading some of the essays, and I was particularly struck by Tom Boyle, T. Karagason Boyle. His Karagason is actually made up. His real name is Tom Boyle. And he wrote that when he read Flannery O'Connor's subversive stories, that it gave him permission to write, I guess, equally subversive stories. He's very funny and very, very smart, I think, as a writer. And I felt sort of the same way when I read Jane Bowles's Two Serious Ladies, a novel. She was the wife of Paul Bowles. I probably don't need to say that, but anyway. And it was such a sort of also subversive and eccentric novel that I felt it gave me permission to write. All my writing may not be subversive, but I just felt like it gave me permission to write as well. And speaking, I'm now reading this incredibly wonderful, brilliant, brilliant book by Richard Powers. He's a MacArthur Fellow, a genius, in other words. The novel is called The Overstory, and it's all about the lives of trees. And I haven't gotten very far into it, but apparently trees have a life. They talk to each other. They have sex. They just have this incredibly complicated connection with each other. It's one of the books that's listed for the Booker Prize this year, but he's really a brilliant, brilliant and amazing writer.
And
I recommend this.
Is this nonfiction?
It's fiction, yeah.
It's fiction.
Yeah, and it's called The Overstory, and I can't recommend it enough.
Okay, great. That's great to know.
Yeah.
And I will I will add that to my very long reading list that I'm developing.
I think Richard Powers is, again, brilliant. He writes a lot about music. He writes about physics. He's a complete polymath, or whatever the word is, but also an amazing sentence maker.
Wonderful. Well, Lily, the last time we saw each other, we were talking a little bit about the role of reading in the age of social media and curiosity about how reading is, how it's happening, what's happening, what people are doing. And you and I were just talking about, you were together with a lot of people, including your grandchildren. And what role do you perceive reading as playing in that generation my generation, the generation of your children and your grandchildren?
Yeah, I think everybody in my generation thinks. I think it's just very limiting and sad, really, that people don't read Moby Dick, they don't read Dickens, they don't read Trollope, wonderful, wonderful Trollope, or Jane Austen, all the classics. Nobody's ever heard of those writers. I don't know what they read, or they read Harry Potter or something like that. I don't know. I know I haven't read Harry Potter, so I shouldn't speak about that. But I guess it's better than nothing. But I just feel that people's education in the arts is very, very limited.
What do you think? If you were to encourage our listeners to read more, what reasoning would you put behind it?
I'm sort of not prepared to answer these heavy-duty questions, but I just think it would broaden their minds, their lives. They would learn things that would be of interest to them. It just would be much more fulfilling than being on Instagram or whatever they're doing, texting.
Yeah, I agree. Lily, this has been very insightful. Is there anything else you'd like to add for our readers, for our listeners? Is there anything else you'd like for our listeners?
No. I mean, I listen to a lot of books on tape, and I think that's an easy way of sort of, it's not reading, but it's almost like reading, and I find that very satisfying. When I'm driving or when I'm just doing errands. And that may be an easier way of reading for kids.
Mm. Wonderful. Well, Lily, thank you for sharing your thoughts about your own journey with books and writing and reading with our listeners today. And thank you for all the wonderful work that you produce.
Well, I hope you you can make sense of what I'm saying. I feel very often that I think writers are not necessarily, some writers, of course, are very articulate, but I feel that I have to write to know what I'm saying, what I'm thinking, basically. I mean, Adonde Lillo has said this a million times. Other people have said, Joan Didion has said this a million times as well, that to know what I'm thinking, I have to write it down, or I have to write it to know what I'm thinking. And speaking is kind of, is less easy, or I feel I'm sort of halting and not as clear in my thoughts when I have to speak as when I write, actually.
That makes sense. I understand that. I think.
Yeah.
I think that it makes sense that you're such a prolific writer, that it's a way for you to express, you know, your innermost thoughts.
Yes, exactly.
And I also, on the other hand, I also think it's an amazing advantage of this type of technology that we have the opportunity to edit. We've been talking for about 30 minutes, and this will be edited down to 20 minutes.
Yeah, good. Good. And I also want to say that what you've been doing, James, is absolutely fantastic and wonderful. And I'm just full of praise and admiration for you.
Thank you. And thank you, of course, for being part of the book, The World is Just a Book Away, and a part of this amazing journey and joining us to be one of the key participants in our first of our series of podcasts.
Well, my pleasure again. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to a podcast production of AW360, the year-round content destination from Advertising Week. Visit AW360 at 360.advertisingweek.com and be sure to check out the other AW360 podcasts now available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Producers on this podcast are Jack Hirschman and Richard Larson, with music provided by Audio Network. For more information on Advertising Week, the world's largest gathering of advertising, marketing, and technology leaders, now in 6 markets across the globe, visit www.advertisingweek.com.